Support for Yale Cancer Answers is provided by AstraZeneca, a biopharmaceutical business that is pushing the boundaries of science to deliver new cancer medicines. More information at AstraZeneca-US.com. Welcome to Yale Cancer Answers with Drs. Howard Hochster, Anish Chagpar, and Stephen Gore. I'm Bruce Barber. Yale Cancer Answers is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care by welcoming oncologists and specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer. This week, in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, it's a patient perspective with breast cancer survivor Anne-Marie Rosaller. Dr. Chagpar is an associate professor in the Department of Surgery at the Yale School of Medicine and the assistant director for global oncology at Yale Comprehensive Cancer Center.
So, Anne-Marie, I thought, you know, this month, October, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and a lot of people are hearing a lot of buzz about breast cancer. You've been through this journey. Tell us your story that starts with, once upon a time, I was perfectly well, and then, dot, dot, dot.
And then, dot, 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 on early December 2011, I was diagnosed with early stage breast cancer.
How did that happen? Like, did you go for a mammogram? Did you feel a lump? Did you have nipple discharge? Like, seriously, start from the very beginning. Because a lot of people, that's the fear that they have, is one day they're going to be diagnosed. But how does that happen?
I was very diligent about having my yearly mammogram because of my family history. My mom had breast cancer when she was 70. She did not die of breast cancer, but she was treated for breast cancer when she was 70. And I was concerned that with my family history, with the fact that I was also on hormone replacement therapy, that I was in a higher risk group, and therefore I made sure that I got my yearly mammogram, and I'm very, very adamant about that. You know, any of my friends I speak to, you have to have your mammogram, regardless of what you read in the paper, because without that, I probably wouldn't be here today.
Because that mammogram found it early, is that right?
Yes. What happened is that I had just retired, and prior to retirement, I decided to transfer all my records from Atlanta, where I was working, to Yale. And why Yale? Because I wanted a comprehensive breast center, one-stop shopping. You know, I knew because of Yale's reputation, it was really important for me to have the best of care. And I had my mammogram in June of 2011. And in June 2011, I was told that I better come back in 6 months to have something checked. And sure enough, in December, I went back and he found something that needed to be biopsied. And I was biopsied and diagnosed with, what is it called? Invasive ductal carcinoma.
Yeah.
And I was so stunned because this is something that happens to everybody but not you.
Exactly.
And I did not know, at the time, I did not know what road I was going to be on. And I think that's the worst part, is just the anxiety. What does that mean? And what reassured me was, in fact, the way I was treated immediately. And I have full disclosure by you in a very reassuring manner. At the time, my mother was hospitalized in a very grave condition in France. And that was my major concern, was taking care of her. And you told me you're not going to let cancer rule your life. You're going to go about your life. We're going to take care of you. And that was the most reassuring thing. The feeling that I felt cared for, there was responsiveness and empathy, and that made a world of difference. And of course, the support of my family and my friends. I was lucky to be in that situation, to be retired also. That was a very positive factor because I did not have to worry about children and work. I must say that even though I was terrified, I can say in retrospect, and even at the time after I was, you know, I had surgery, after I had radiotherapy, that I felt I had optimum experience with, you know, having breast cancer that I could possibly have. And for that reason, I felt that it was important that I share that message with other patients, because the terror I felt quickly, well, the worst part is the wait, you know, waiting for mammogram result, waiting for the MRI results, waiting for the pathology report. You don't know what it all means. You don't know what road you're going to be on. And at the end of, after having been through all this, I can say that it has been a very, I hate to say positive, but it was the best possible experience I could have with my diagnosis.
So let's take a step back. You go for your mammogram. They call you back in 6 months. What was that like? What were the thoughts going through your head when they said, you know, we see something, but it might be nothing. Come back in 6 months.
I was not so concerned because I had mammograms every year. And every time I was called back because I had dense breast tissue. So I had to have a sonogram. They saw something. And every time it was a cyst.
So you thought, okay, six months.
Okay, one more time. And so I was stunned and terrified.
Yeah. So then you come back in December and they say, well, now we need to do a biopsy. And you have that biopsy. And you said the worst part is the wait. So how long did you have to wait to get the results back? And how did those results get delivered to you?
Well, that was not so positive. that was the only negative part of my whole experience is that, well, I think it took maybe 3 days for me to get the results of the biopsy. And the way I received the results is by a message on my answering machine. I just come back from walking my dog and I find this message saying that I had to come in for an MRI.
Mm. And who was that from your family doctor or your OBGYN?
No, this was from Yale.
From the radiology?
Yes.
Yeah?
And so I knew instantly what that meant. This is when I tried to call back and I get another, you know, I had to leave a voicemail message. But I had, and that's what I find really very positive in my experience at Yale, I had your email. And I emailed you and you responded immediately. Not only you didn't respond by email, you called me.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important for when you're a patient to have a medical team that is responsive. And we understand that, you know, medical teams, I mean, your doctors and your nurse coordinators are dealing with many patients and are very busy, but it means the world to a patient to have that kind of responsiveness.
So you get called back. And they say you need an MRI. And at what point did they tell you that you have cancer?
Well, when you called me back, you told me that I had, you know, breast cancer early stage. And you were as reassuring as you could possibly be. And so I had the MRI. And you also warned me that the MRI... And that's something I tell all my friends or other patients I speak to, that, you know, an MRI can come back with alarming results, a lot of false positive, which happens with me.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant that I had to have another biopsy, an MRI-guided biopsy,
mm-hmm.
which was also another wait, another anxiety-provoking experience.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, actually, that's probably the time when I was most scared because the other breast was involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about possible, you know, we were talking then about a double mastectomy, One thing that, you know, when I was diagnosed, you told me all my options. I mean, you laid out all the options with all the possible outcomes, all the statistics. And so basically it was my decision based on all the facts that you laid out in front of me. And I opted for a partial mastectomy. But then when the MRI results came, there was a possibility of a double mastectomy.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that probably was the worst part for me. But then when we got the results of the biopsy, it was better than we had anticipated. So it was, yes, but I remember those times are as very...
Up and down. Huh?
Up and down, and the weight. It's the weight, really.
Yeah.
And not knowing which road. I think once you're on the path of action, meaning taking a treatment, then I felt better.
Mm-hmm.
When I knew what the path was going to be, they were still, you know, waiting for the results of pathology report following the surgery. But once we went ahead with surgery, then I felt much better.
Right. Right, because you had taken action to get the cancer out.
Yes.
And at the same time, you were dealing with your mom, who was ill in France. What was that like, trying to go through cancer treatment yourself and still worrying about your mom?
Well, in retrospect, I think in a way it helped me. It took my mind off, you know, my situation.
Mm-hmm.
That was losing your mom is, you know, a major, major event in one's life. Mm-hmm. And she was a force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
She was also a volunteer. She was the head of the nursing section for the Red Cross in Monaco for many, many years until she was 87 when she attended a conference in Osaka, Japan for the Red Cross, and when she came back, she had a stroke.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, and so the last 3 years of her life were really, really tough, and so she was hospitalized. She was 90 when I was diagnosed, and she was in the hospital. And that was, I think probably the most stressful part mm-hmm. of it all. And in a way, she helped me.
Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that is really important for people to understand and our listeners who may be going through this is that, you know, breast cancer never, you know, kind of picks a date on your schedule and says, is this a good time? It always happens when other things are happening. It's an unanticipated event. And you have to make sure that you live your life. Your breast cancer treatment is there to help you live your life, but you've got to live your life and take care of the cancer at the same time. But don't put off, you know, going to see your mom who's ill or going in on a trip.
And I did not. And you were instrumental in that, in pushing me to go on about my life.
Right.
And reassuring me that you and the Yale team were there to take care of me. And, okay.
So. Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute and learn a lot more about Anne-Marie's story in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month right after this.
Support for Yale Cancer Answers is provided by AstraZeneca, working side by side with leading scientists to better understand how complex data can be converted into innovative treatments. More information at AstraZeneca-US.com. This is a medical minute about lung cancer. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are related to smoking, and quitting, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. For lung cancer patients, clinical trials are currently underway to test innovative new treatments. Advances are being made by utilizing targeted therapies and immunotherapies. The Battle 2 trial at Yale aims to learn if a drug or combination of drugs based on personal biomarkers can help to control non-small cell lung cancer. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.
This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined tonight by my guest, Anne-Marie Rosaller. She's sharing today her story of survivorship with us in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And right before the break, Anne-Marie, you were telling us about how you actually went back to France, right in the middle of all of your treatments. Tell us more about that.
Well, in fact, I was diagnosed in December, and the surgery was scheduled for the middle of January. And in consultation with you, we agreed that we could postpone it to early February so that I could be with my mother, which I did. And I went back, and I spent about 3 weeks with her. I knew at the time that it was the end, but I could not stay any longer. So I came back for the surgery, and I think 3 days after surgery, she passed away. And so when I called you and I said, can I go back for the funeral? And you said yes. So I went less than a week after surgery, I went back to France for the funeral.
Yeah.
I was at the time, I didn't have the results of the pathology report. I know. So when I came back, after I came back, we got the good news, which were that I would require treatment of radiotherapy, no chemo. And that was a huge relief. And I went and I met with the radiology, the oncologist, and who agreed that I could have the treatment close to me because I live about an hour and 20 minutes away from Yale, which I did. And I was so grateful and so relieved that to me going for, you know, my daily treatments was felt like a gift in a way.
Tell me more about that.
I was, I was very worried about chemo. And so the fact that I did not have to undergo chemo was a huge relief for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I experienced, you know, the severe sunburn and but other than that, I was fine.
Yeah.
I was fine. I was fine, and I was fine also because I felt things were slowly returning to normal. I was also grieving for my mother, so it's, you know, things do get back to normal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you went back, though, and were able to spend some quality time with her before she passed.
Yes, but that was really a tough part because I knew she was dying.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be with her when she passed. So
yeah.
That's something that I deeply regret, but my brothers were with her, so that's my consolation.
Yeah. And so you went through radiation treatments and you got back to normal. Talk more about that, because a lot of people who may be looking at breast cancer and facing breast cancer may wonder whether things ever get back to normal.
Well, they do. And it feels wonderful.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, it made me realize that you can't ever take normal for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think it was in a way a wonderful feeling to get back to normal. So such a relief, and things do get back to normal, and normal feels amazing. That's the way it felt. And that's why I decided to volunteer.
Yeah.
Because I had that feeling that, yes, you can be terrified, you can be, you know, have so much anxiety, but it will pass.
Yeah. Tell us more about that, because I think it is so amazing and we're so grateful to see how patients, you know, they go through this time of tumultuousness with their own breast cancer journey, and then they really want to give back in a positive way. And you've really made a difference to a lot of patients. Tell us more about how that happened, how you made the decision to volunteer, and what that experience has been like for you.
It is strange because, I mean, it just I wanted to volunteer because I had just retired, and I knew that that was one of the things that I wanted to do, was to volunteer. But I wasn't sure in what capacity. I thought Red Cross, maybe. And this was a natural.
Mm.
Because I felt I had such a positive experience, or the optimum experience, I would say, I could have. And it felt so good that it felt, and I saw all these volunteers that when I came pretty much every week or every 2 weeks at Yale, and it felt like a normal thing to do. And I remember meeting with the volunteer coordinator, Annie Kaplan, and she actually said to me very point blank, she said, "Are you sure you want to do this?"
Mm.
She said, "A lot of patients don't want to have anything to do, you know, with coming back." And I said, "I need it." I felt it was a need. It was therapeutic for me because it kind of normalized the whole experience, coming every week to see the team who cared for me, but to also speak with other patients and try and help, you know, with my experience to reassure them that, yes, things do get back to normal. And it does feel wonderful.
Yeah.
So.
And I know that a lot of patients really are so grateful to have other patients who have gone through it, kind of helping to chaperone all of the other issues. You know, you've got your surgeon telling you about the surgery and the radiation oncologist telling you about the radiation. But having another patient who has lived that journey and gone through the ups and downs and the roller coaster of emotions must be so wonderful.
I don't feel like I'm doing very much, but sometimes I come across a patient and we hit it off, and I've actually become friends with some patients. And when you're hit with the news, it's just so overwhelming. And I remember getting that big binder,
mm-hmm,
with a ton of information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that many patients actually go through the binder. I know that there's also a nurse coordinator, there's a social worker, there's a complementary services. So there are a lot of resources, but there's just so much. So it's good to be, you know, to speak to another patient who actually tells you, you know, what's helped him or her.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, being with other patients, speaking with other patients has also been helpful.
Yeah. And then you went off and became a Zumba instructor.
As I've always been a dance lover.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tried to take as many classes as I could, always. And I discovered at my local gym, that was in 2010, I discovered a fitness program called Zumba, and I thought, this is for me, I love it. I was becoming really frustrated because they kept canceling classes, and I said, the only way for me to do this on a regular basis is to teach. So I became a licensed Zumba instructor, and it was so helpful in my recovery also, physically and emotionally, that I thought it might not be a bad idea to share that with other patients. And that's how I decided, you know, I asked if I could teach as a volunteer a class for patients, and I've been doing that now for 2 years.
Yeah. And do patients love it?
Yes, they do. Those who actually are adventurous, because Zumba scares a lot of people. Yeah. It's too violent, too intense, but
it really isn't.
It isn't, because you adjust the intensity. And I teach, I actually became Zumba Gold, which is low intensity Zumba, for that purpose, so that I could go back to smile and say, this is really no impact, gentle Zumba, as you have gentle yoga. And I've been enjoying it very much. And patients, I think, it's a small group, but they are regulars and they like it a lot.
Yeah,
it's Zumba therapy, really.
Yeah, I take Zumba at a local gym here too, and I love it. It would be so nice if the healthcare workers could also take your Zumba class.
Yes, they also say they would love to, but they don't have time because they're working.
Yeah, yes. That's right. But talk a little bit about, you know, in survivorship, one of the things that we talk about a lot is not only getting back to normal, but getting back to physical activity and exercise. And so I thought that your idea to bring Zumba to patients was such a wonderful idea, to really get people active, to help them to exercise, to get down to ideal body weight. These are all things that a lot of breast cancer patients struggle with.
Yes, and when I, you know, when patients come to Zumba class, I also tell them, you know, if you don't like Zumba, I mean, find something that you love to mm-hmm. do. I think what's really, really important, both physically and mentally, is just moving, is not to stay still ever, is to move. For me, it's crucial.
Yeah.
And I hope that, you know, even patients who have come and loved it but can't come back, and encourage them to find classes at the Y or their local gym, or to find something that they love doing, whether it's walking, cycling, swimming, you name it, just right. hiking. For me, walking my dog also has been very important. You know, yeah. I walked my dog for an hour every day, and physical activity is, and basically doing what you love.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that you really engender in people and in patients is having a really positive outlook on the world. There's never a time I see you when you don't have a smile on your face.
Well, I mean, it's one thing that cancer has made me realize, first of all, it's very humbling. You realize that you don't know what it's like. You know, you may have had many friends, and I do, unfortunately, have many friends who have dealt with cancer, and not only breast cancer. You don't know what it's like until you deal with it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made me realize, you know, how tenuous and how fragile normal is. And I say to, you know, to all my friends, you know, don't let the small stuff bother you. Just,
yep.
you know, you have to live your life with a vengeance. And kindness is a lot easier, in my opinion. Being kind and smiling is so much easier than being nasty.
Yep. Yep. And the number of patients that I have had who really have taken that outlook of a new outlook on life, that it is precious, and things that maybe scared them before, they'll now take on, or bad relationships that they were in, they now get out of, or good relationships they get into. And this kind of almost metamorphosis that cancer has, that really is very, as you called it in our last segment, positive. Talk more about that. How is cancer a positive experience? Because a lot of people who have not experienced it think it's the end of the world. But so many cancer patients come out of it and they say, you know what? I didn't like having cancer, but it was one of the most positive things that could have happened to me.
Yes. And, you know, I hesitate to say positive, but for me, and, you know, I have, for full disclosure, I had the, you know, because of my own personal situation, being retired and having a lot of family, you know, support and friends support, having really top-notch care, it was still positive, because it made me realize, you know, that my life can, any life can turn on a dime. And so just treasure,
mm-hmm.
treasure, you know, everything that's good about your life. And treasure your friends, your family, everything that you, and do everything that you love with a passion.
Anne Marie Rosaller is a breast cancer survivor. If you have questions, the address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and past editions of the program are available in audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. I'm Bruce Barber, reminding you to tune in each week to learn more about the fight against cancer. Here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.